BBC Radio 4 brand new comedy as Richard Wilson unveils his radiography, revealing intimate, confidential, surprising and largely untrue revelations about his life in Believe It.
I believe for every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows.
My great uncle Hamish died 60 years ago. I can't forget him. I've tried, believe me. When I was a boy, he'd turn up at our house all the time and greet my four sisters in his great Uncle Hamish way.
Hello, darling. How are you, darling?
Then he'd turn to me.
Richard!
Great Uncle Hamish. He was, in so many ways, an ass. But in 1948, when I was 12, he changed my life.
I believe above the storm.
You are listening to Believe It, the radiography of me, Richard Wilson. Mine is a story of poverty, soccer, fame, addiction, politics, theatre and mystery. There is triumph over tragedy, tragedy over triumph, and of course, tragedy over tragedy. On November the 25th, 1948, Mother gave me an early Christmas present to take to the aforementioned great Uncle Hamish. He always appeared uninvited at our house on Christmas Day. It was a family tradition. If I took his present to him a month before the day, then there'd be no need for him to come, and Mother could spend an entire month looking forward to his absence.
Be careful with his present. Don't drop it. And put it under his tree.
I know, Mummy.
And whatever you do, don't let him, you know.
Of course not, Mum.
She always said that. I didn't know what you know was, but I knew I'd know you know when you know made itself known. I trudged off into the snow.
Home by nine!
I know!
Have you got your gloves?
Yes, Mummy, bye!
I waved at her with my gloved right hand, so she wouldn't know I'd lost the left. Two Christmases earlier, my Auntie Sheila had given me a right-hand grey glove. She said if I behaved throughout the year, she'd give me another glove to go with it. Sure enough, next Christmas, she gave me a left-hand grey glove. My Auntie Sheila was mad, of course. When I was a child in the 1940s, all adults were mad. But nobody told you. You had to work it out for yourself. Hamish lived in a croft on the farm where he'd worked as a farmhand. He was a retired farmhand. When I was 12, that sounded exciting. But now it sounds like proof of a stunted life. Retired farmhand. Isn't that like retired newspaper boy? I walked the 4 miles to his white front door. He was waiting for me. He knew I was coming. One knock was all it took.
Richard! What you got there?
Mummy told me to put it under your Christmas tree.
Oh, she's teasing you, man. There's no tree. Give it here. I'll open it now, eh? Come in, son. You must be freezing. Warm your hands by the fire.
Thank you.
I approached the fireplace and extended my hands. There was no fire. No kindling, no coal, no flames. No fire. So I warmed my hands on the icy wind blowing down the chimney.
How did your mother know I liked whiskey?
I don't know.
Hamish poured himself a whiskey. It looked as rich and orange as the wee-wee of God.
How's school? What are your favourite subjects? What would you like to be when you grow up?
My favourite subject is...
That's enough! Polite conversation! Do you want to have an exciting life and forget most of it? Or a blameless life and remember every second?
An exciting life?
That's right! Then drink.
Soon as he started filling my glass, I knew. This was... Yeah, no.
Would you like water?
No, I'll have the whiskey now you've poured it.
Spoken like a man. There you go, son. Lift it to your mouth and throw your head back.
Righty-ho.
Never trust a man who doesn't drink, because he's walking around with truths inside him, which he never gets out. So, tell me the truth now. What's your deepest, darkest fear?
I've lost a glove my Auntie Sheila gave me, but I can't tell Mum because she'll get upset.
Drink again, son.
Right.
I've got good news. 10 seconds time, you won't give a damn about that glove. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
You're right.
Good man, ahead of schedule, eh? More truth now. Tell me something you never, ever dreamt you could tell a soul.
There's no fire in your fireplace.
Oh, you're right. Why didn't you tell me earlier?
I had a drink.
He laughed. Then he stood up and weaved his way to the fireplace to spit and make a fire. Right he went, then right, then left. Then, amazingly, he swerved round a chair and headed onward towards his goal.
The room's going round now. Is that normal?
You're a good boy. Look after the drinkers, eh? Help them on their way.
Oh, dear. You all right?
He was dead. Not politely, in the English way, not, oh dear, I rather fear I passed away. Mouth open, staring eyes, drink stink, Scott's dead. I ran out of the croft, slamming the door. I had to tell Mother. She'd know what to do. I ran and I ran and I ran and I ran. It was hard, with the snow falling and my bare left hand in my pocket. And, of course, the room wasn't spinning anymore. No, the whole white world was spinning. But I didn't stop. I didn't dare. Finally, I saw that familiar front door. I was back at Great Uncle Hamish's.
Bugger!
I'd never sworn outdoors before. It was exciting. Half an hour later, shivering and exhausted, I found my own front door.
Where have you been? Where's your other glove? Oh, have you lost it?
Yes, I've lost it, and I don't give a damn. That's the truth.
You let him, didn't you? You let him, you know.
I did. I had a large, you know, and I liked it.
You will place your head in a bucket of water and then you will write your Auntie Sheila a letter of apology.
Why? Why don't I write her half a letter? I'd send the other half next Christmas. She's mad, Mum. Mad and mean. That's the truth.
Stop saying that.
Oh, there's something I have to tell you, Mum.
Is it the truth?
Yes.
Then I don't want to hear it.
And that's why I never told my mother about dead great-uncle Hamish. 3 days later, when he was found, no link was made to me. But my life was changed forever. Oh, yes. I decided I would never drink again. Drink meant truth and death. What could be more scary? In 1959, at the age of 23, I moved to London. It was the age of instrumentals. Ross Conway, Winifred Atwell, The Shadows, Duane Eddy. In the late 1950s, nobody sang because there weren't any words to sing. Instead, everyone walked around whistling and humming. Living in London was like living with 8 million window cleaners. Just as I planned, I became an electrical engineer. I specialise in remote control communication using earpieces and the like. I was good at it, but it wasn't me.
Hey there, Georgie girl.
In 1965, I walked up Carnaby Street with the top button of my shirt undone. The world was opening up to me. I was at drama school now. I'd got away from Mother and electrical engineering, but not Great Uncle Hamish. His death still haunted me. Was he even dead when I ran out of his croft? He looked dead, but what did I know? I was just a boy, and a drunk boy at that. Would he still be alive if I'd run to the nearest house? I remembered his words. Always help a drunk across a road. If an old lady asked me to help across the road, I'd tell her to get drunk first. The world would see a new Georgie girl. 1969. My first job. I had a bit part in the film Oh, What a Lovely War. One night, I drove a very merry Laurence Olivier home to Brighton after the cast and crew party. The great man lay in the back of the car.
This is so kind of you, dear boy. So kind.
My pleasure, Sir Laurence. We are just coming into Brighton now.
What?
Might I inquire where you live exactly?
You might. You absolutely might. But I'm powerless to enlighten you.
Right. Shall I drive round till you recognize your house?
What a splendid plan.
You'll need to look out of the window, Sir Laurence.
I can't, dear boy. I'm wedded to the horizontal.
You see, I was a drunk's helpmeet and protector and friend. It came naturally to me. Only later did I discover that Sir Laurence had spent the night drinking elderflower cordial. He was acting drunk. Extraordinary to think that the world's greatest actor would bother to act in his spare time with me as his only audience. In his honour, elderflower cordial became my tipple. 1973. I was working in Manchester on a TV series called Crown Court. Early one evening, I knelt by some railings near the old Nag's Head on Jackson's Road to tie my shoelaces. When I looked up, I saw an object impaled on a railing. A glove. A right-hand grey glove. I felt a tightening in my throat, as if the glove had leapt off the railing and gripped it. I was back in that cottage on the night of his death. And then I became aware that a short, dark-haired, twinkly-eyed man was staring at the glove with me.
You always wonder what happened to the other one, don't you?
There he stood. I say stood. There he weaved. George Best, the greatest footballer who ever lived.
I know you. You're in that thing, aren't you?
That's right.
Mm. Oh, no, that's somebody else. Oh, sorry. I'm a bit pissed.
No, you're right. I am in that thing, Crown Court. And you're in that thing on the pitch.
I am. Listen, I just came out the pub, so, you know, maybe it's time I went back in. You know? I'd like to buy you a drink.
I'd be honoured. I'm Richard.
George, what's your tipple, Richard?
Elderflower cordial.
I don't know what that is, but I'll buy you a pint. Hey, you're in that thing, aren't you?
And so I became George Best's drinking partner. Non-drinking partner, as it were. Months went by. Marvellous months. A night in the pub with George was a riot.
Georgie, over here.
How are you, you gorgeous thing? Hi, this is my new friend, Richard. Richard, say hello to Miss World.
Hello, I'm honoured.
Likewise. I'm just going to powder my nose. I'll see you later, Georgie.
When did you win it?
What?
Miss World.
No, it's a nickname. I call all my girlfriends that, because chances are they are Miss World, you know?
I see.
A few weeks later, we sat at the back of the stalls in the Oxford Playhouse, watching my production of Dennis Potter's Only Make-Believe. I'd never seen so many people in a theatre audience with their backs to the stage. Everyone was looking at George. When it was over, I asked him what he thought.
I loved it, Richard.
Thank you. I directed it. It's like being a soccer manager, you know. It's about choreographing your players, making sure they don't stand in a line. What did you love most, George?
I really loved the interval.
He did, too. He bought drinks for everyone and was utterly charming, especially to the Australian girl behind the bar. I forget her name. No, wait. Miss World. Next morning, I went to the training ground and watched Tommy Docherty, the Man U manager, put George through his paces. The Doc was not a happy man. Man U were near the bottom of the first division, and George was heavy-legged.
In the bloody work, George! You're bloody useless! That's not what we pay you for!
Sorry, Doc, I can't understand!
I'll bet you bloody can. You! Jimmy!
Are you talking to me?
Yeah! You're his new best mate, aren't you? You tell him!
Excuse me, George!
Hello there!
Would you kindly hit the ball into the roof of the net from an impossible angle?
For you, no problem!
The doc was impressed. I was evidently a very good influence. After the session, he took me aside and begged me to tell George to stop drinking. The previous day in training, he'd dribbled past three defenders, rounded the goalkeeper, and scored the greatest own goal the doc had ever seen. I rang George and said I had something to say to him. He told me to meet him at the Slack Alice nightclub on Bootle Street. At 3 in the morning, I still hadn't broached the subject.
Come on then, Dick. What did you want to say to me?
Nothing, George, really.
Say it. I won't respect you if you don't.
Okay. Can you get me a ticket for the QPR game?
Sure. Buy us a drink, will you?
Of course. The truth is, what was the truth? Great Uncle Hamish told me to look after the drinkers. I was the drinker's friend. If George stopped drinking, I might no longer be his friend. He was staggering around. If I couldn't stop him drinking, I could at least direct him.
Follow me, George.
Right, where are we going?
Watch me. Do as I do. Boogie to the left. Boogie to the right. Left hand in the air. Right hand in the air. Right hand in the air. Concentrate.
Jesus, this is supposed to be fun.
Obeying me is fun. Boogie to the left.
Boogie January the 1st, 1974. That was the day it all came together. Great Uncle Hamish, the drinker's friend, electrical engineering. My whole life had been leading up to QPR versus Manchester United. The doc stood on the touchline, shouting.
Keep your shape now, closed in. Keep it tight, pressure. High up the pitch, oh Jesus, oh my God.
I was behind the doc, whispering into a microphone. I looked as if I was commentating, but I wasn't. I was directing. Beneath his long jet black hair, George was wearing an earpiece.
Dribble to the right, George. Now dribble to the left. He fouls you. Put your left hand in the air and look at the ref. That's good. Okay, you take the free kick. Willie Morgan's behind you. Back heel it to Willie on a count of three. One, two.
They loved that back heel to the Man U fans. It was, though I say it myself, a very good piece of direction. Was I wrong to do what I did? Of course. It went against the laws and the spirit of the game. You can't control what a man does on the pitch. That's not soccer. That's subutio. But you have to understand, the team I loved was fighting relegation, and George was fighting inebriation. I was only trying to help. And then they scored. QPR 1, Man U 0. A fierce drive from Don Givens. 15 minutes later, 2-0. Stan Bowes heading in from a corner. At half-time, George and I met in the tunnel. He was not a happy man.
That was terrible. You're playing rubbish.
I'm sorry, George.
One back heel from a free kick, that's not going to win us the game.
You're right.
I need you to get me into their box, did you understand?
I do.
How old are you?
37 and a half.
Well, no wonder you're slow.
I'm so sorry.
You think I'm being hard on you?
No, George, you're a genius. They're always hard on people.
That's my fault, isn't it? I'm no bloody good anymore.
No, it's my fault.
Yeah, you're right.
In the second half, I gave it everything. Slow? Not I. For 15 minutes, my mouth just never stopped moving.
Run with it. Cut inside now. Look up now. Cross to McElroy. McElroy's free. Now. Too late.
What was the point? George couldn't keep up. He couldn't take the pace. And so, for the next 15 minutes, I said nothing. George kept turning his head to look at a man in the crowd. 32,000 people didn't know who that man was, but I did. I just looked away. My mind wandered. I saw Hamish in his cottage, swerving past that chair as he headed towards the fireplace. The fireplace he never reached. And then, when I looked back at the pitch, I saw George, with three defenders to beat, heading towards the goal. My heart went out to him. Hamish never reached his goal. George would. I'd make sure of it.
George, it's me. Go right past the first defender. Yes. Left past the next. Yes. Now, swerve past this man like he's a chair. To the right. Olé!
And now he had only the goalie to beat. Should he go past him and tap it in? Draw him, then hit it to his right or left? Or chip it over him? It only takes a second to score a goal, so I gave him his order, loud and clear.
George, fall over.
George fell over. Though he was on his own with only the goalie to beat, 32,000 soccer fans asked themselves, in their salty vernacular, why the blankety hell did the blank fall over? I knew, because I told him to. He had to fall over. Just as great Uncle Hamish had done. I could have, as it were, scored a goal for Manchester United. Who knows what would have happened if George had scored my goal? From 2-1 down, they might have pulled it back. Instead, at the end of that season, they were relegated. George was sacked for excessive drinking and persistent failure to attend training and matches. I will never forget the last words he spoke to me. I was in the shower. All the other players had gone.
Richard!
Hold on, I'll turn this off.
Do you think maybe I should give up the booze? Tell us the truth now.
I didn't tell him the truth. I mean, you need a drink to do that. November the 25th, 2005. I heard the news of George's death in a recording studio in Soho. Half an hour later, I found myself on a train to Manchester. This is the glory of living on your own. You can go to Manchester without explaining yourself to anyone. You don't even have to explain it to yourself. What was I doing, walking past the railings near the old Nag's Head? Hoping to see that grey left-hand glove? The one that was impaled there 32 years earlier? The night I met George? It was gone. Of course it was gone. There was a black glove now. The council obviously changed the glove every 10 years or so. I walked into the pub. It's what George would have wanted. Soon as I entered, a bloke shouted,
"I don't believe it!"
Because he'd won on a fruit machine. No one had ever shouted my catchphrase in reference to something else. It was wonderful. I walked up to the bar. That's what George would have wanted too. George wanted me to have a drink.
What would you like?
I normally drink whiskey. I say normally, I haven't had one for 50 years. I fancy a lager. Yes, lager. Time for a change.
Okie dokie, right. Grolsch Heineken, Budweiser, Pils Corona, Carlsberg, Stella Cobra, Peroni Foster's.
One of each.
Of course, it's what he would have wanted.
You understand?
I do. We're all drinking for George today.
What shall we do with the drunken sailor? What shall we do with the drunk?
An hour later, I staggered out of the pub and into the next door hotel. I knew, with drunken clarity, exactly what I had to do.
Miss World?
Is that Miss World?
Yes.
Am I actually speaking to Miss World?
This is the Miss World organisation. How can I help you at all, please?
This is Richard Wilson, you know, off the telly.
Right.
I'd like to seduce Miss World.
Sorry, you'd like to produce Miss World?
Seduce.
Can you spell that for me at all, please?
S A-D. No, wait. Truth and death.
Yes.
That's what drink means to me. The truth is, I was sad, and George was dead. Every year, on the anniversary of his death, I have a drink, and I do something George would have wanted. This year, I ran out of my flat in Hampstead, a football under my arm. It's amazing. I'm in my 70s and I can still run. It's just that I run at the same speed as I walk. And I ran till I came across a football match. George scored 178 goals for Man U. I was determined to score one. Excuse me, I have to take a penalty. I walked onto the pitch and put the ball on the penalty spot. All the other players backed off. They could see I meant business. The goalkeeper jigged around trying to put me off. He was a big lad, maybe 4 feet, which is tall for a 7-year-old. So, what would George have done? Hit it to his right, his left, straight through his legs, chipped it over him? Now, that would be something. I ran up to the ball, and I don't remember anything after that.
You fell over, Mr. Wilson,
said the wee sweet Scots nurse when I woke up in the hospital bed.
You're concussed, and we'd like to keep you in overnight. Is there anyone you'd like us to contact?
Did I fall over before or after?
Before or after what, dear?
I was taking a penalty. Did I fall over before or after I took it?
Oh, yes, that's right, dear. You scored a lovely penalty. Now, these pills will help you sleep.
I know when a Scots woman's lying. I blasted it over the crossbar, didn't I? And all the little children laughed. Or did I smash it into the top right corner of the net? Did they have a net? How would I know? I'd had a few drinks. It's like Great Uncle Hamish said. Do you want to have an exciting life and forget most of it, or a blameless life and remember every second? Cheers.
Every time I hear a new...
You've been listening to Believe It, the radiography of me, Richard Wilson. I would like to thank my actor friends for their help in this endeavour. Lewis MacLeod, John Sessions, Jane Slaven, David Tennant, and Arabella Weir. I'd also like to thank my ghost writer, John Cantor, and my producer, Clive Brill of Pacificus Productions. And our hosts, BBC Radio 4. One more thing. Every word you've heard is true. Or is it? Or is it?
More unlikely.